He's about 455 yards away. He's going to hit about a 2-iron, I think.
This is the School of Motion podcast. Come for the MoGraph, stay for the puns.
And it just, it's something that everybody has to, you know, get over the growing pains of animation. It's always painful, you know, it's always painful, but it's worth going through that process to see the end result for me.
Recently, School of Motion took a field trip to Detroit, Michigan to film at 4 studios in an attempt to find out what it's like to be a modern day motion designer. Now, you'll be seeing the results of that trip soon enough, but in the meantime, I want to tell you one thing that happened while we were there. We were visiting a studio called Gunner, an incredible shop that's been getting a ton of attention lately for their killer work, and while we were there, we noticed one artist doing things a little differently than everyone else. Instead of using After Effects or Cinema 4D to make things move, she was doing it the old-fashioned way, frame by frame, trying to get the hair on this one character to sway just right. Her name is Rachel Reed, and in today's episode, you're going to find out what it takes to do traditional cel animation at the level required to work at a place like Gunner. Rachel's work has an incredible amount of variety for someone who literally has to draw every single frame, and she's got some really amazing insights about developing the ability to have different styles, getting the hang of traditional animation, and even some great tips for drawing in general. She's a rising star in the world of MoGraph, and we are honored to have her. So let's hear from Rachel right after this quick message from one of our alumni.
Hello, my name is Paul Pascal, and I'm from Portland, Oregon, and I've taken the After Effects Kickstart from School of Motion. What I've gotten from this course is learning properly how to use the tools, learning the practices, common techniques, and effects to enhance my video projects. The training has helped my career by saving me time in post-production and understanding along the way what exactly I need to do to make the effects and tools work for the story and subject for my videos. This has also assisted me with quicker turnaround times and informing clients that I can get them their final product sooner than usual. I would recommend the After Effects Kickstart to anyone who wants to learn how After Effects operates and works by learning from an professional entry-level instructor. My name is Paul, and I'm a School of Motion graduate.
Rachel, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I'm super excited to chat with you.
Thank you, Joey, for having me. I'm also super excited.
Awesome. I was really excited, actually, the first time I met you because Caleb from School of Motion mm-hmm. and I had been sort of admiring all of the work on Gunner's website, and we kept seeing this name pop up, Rachel Reed, and we're like, we gotta make, I hope she's there when we go visit the studio. So let's start like way at the beginning. How did you get into drawing and animation? Like, when did you know that this was something you wanted to pursue?
Well, it's just something that I've been into ever since I can remember. I remember my mom telling me that when I was 2 years old, I was getting angry, scribbling on a piece of paper, balling it up, throwing it from the high chair. And just, you know, I've always been interested in Disney and Pixar and a lot of influence from Miyazaki. And I just wanted to know how they did it because animated characters were just so real to me. Like, you know, it's like another dimension of something you created, but like, you know, it's real, but not here on this earth or something. It's something weird like that that goes on in my mind about animation, but that's what makes it really exciting.
I get it. And I don't know how old you are, but what are the Disney movies that growing up really sort of like hooked you?
Well, I'm a 90s kid, so I had just turned 24. Tarzan, Pocahontas, like Beauty and the Beast, all those, you know, Lion King was my favorite. You know, those are the movies that kind of was like, yeah, I love to draw. You know, I didn't know what an animator was at the time, but, you know, it just kind of naturally happened.
It seems like pretty much everybody I know who draws well, when I ask them, you know, how did you get good at drawing? They say the exact same thing. They say, I've been drawing since as long as I can remember. Since I was a kid, I was always drawing. And you just said the exact same thing. So do you think, you know, like the way my brain works is when I see someone who's really good at something, and you're very, very good at this. I always want to know, like, what's the secret? Like how, and I'm sure that you've been told, you know, many times in your life, wow, you draw so well, Rachel. Do you remember, like, at what point you really started to feel like, okay, I'm good enough at this where maybe I should go to school for this?
I guess it was like drawing always came naturally for me, but I honestly wanted to be a veterinarian. I always drew animals, you know, I didn't really draw humans or anything. And I was like, I love to draw, but I love puppies and I want to, you know, be a veterinarian. But then, you know, after a while I started to learn, or at least attempt learning animation, because it's so hard even before college. So I was like, you know, I really love animation. I still kept up with all the Pixar movies that were coming out. So, and just discovering some 2D animation as well, I said to myself, well, I should go to school for this, you know, because I went to Lawrence Tech University before art school, and I did computer science for a year. And I realized that, you know, school is a long time, 4 years. So I might as well just stop computer science and do what I love.
So you ended up at the College for Creative Studies, and that's in Detroit, right?
Yes.
Okay, cool. Are you from Detroit? Is that why you went to that school?
Yeah, I'm from Detroit, born and raised here, never left.
Well, I got to say, like, I had never been to Detroit before the trip where I met you. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know what to expect because, you know, like, my only experience with Detroit was like watching 8 Mile and like hearing about, you know, like Flint and stuff like that, you know, and I get there, I'm like, this city's amazing. And the scenes there is really cool. So what was it like going to the College of Creative Studies? What was that program like? You know, what were sort of things that you learned there?
Well, the College for Creative Studies is primarily known for transportation design, you know, being in Detroit. So I went there for the entertainment arts program, which includes traditional animation, games, and film. So what was great about the College for Creative Studies is really the foundation classes. I think those really helped me as an animator, more so than the like Animation 1 class where you learn the principles of animation and then you move on to understanding timing and spacing in your animation. But the foundation courses for me helped me become a better artist in general, learning 2D design to just rendering drawings and gesture drawing and figure drawing and some perspective. All of those classes combined really helped me be more confident in my drawing, as well as like when I'm posing characters, whether it's in 3D or in 2D.
So what were some of the things in those foundation classes that stuck with you?
I think getting a good gesture when you're looking at a model, like a live model, you really want to make sure everything looks rounded, that, you know, everything flows from one part to the other, pretty much like stuff like that. Because I used to, before that class, my characters would look really stiff and there wasn't much movement in the strokes. And I think gesture drawing really helped me loosely put some action into the pose. You know what I mean?
Yeah, one of the things I've been told a lot, because I taught for 1 year at the Ringling College of Art and Design, and we did this cool thing while I was there called Drawing Week, where all of the students in all of the motion design classes spent the entire week drawing. And it was literally the first time in my life I'd ever sat with a big pad and a mm-hmm. pencil and actually tried to just stare at something and draw it. And we did some figure drawing, but it was like people had their clothes on. So it wasn't like, you know, the, what everyone thinks of when you say figure drawing. And what kept coming up over and over with like the speakers we had was you need to learn to see before you can draw. Mm-hmm. And I never really understood that. I'm curious if that idea of learning to see before you can actually learn to draw is something that resonates with you, that maybe you picked up in those foundation classes.
Yeah, that's absolutely true, because I remember, you know, because in gesture drawing and then the foundation classes, you know, most of the time you are just sitting there for a long time drawing the person. But beforehand, I remember doing these exercises where we couldn't put our eyes on the pad that we were drawing on. We had to keep our eyes locked on the model and then just try to like see all of the little bumps and the crevices and all the stuff in the skin and just the way the muscles are rounded and how like the, you know, shoulder goes into the arm, into the elbow, into the forearm, and then, you know, just trying to look at all that stuff so we can capture it. So we weren't able to look at the paper, which is so scary, and then the drawing ends up looking like a mess, but at the same, you're really just training your eye to see all those things.
That's fascinating. You're the second person on this podcast to bring that up. The first was Lillian Darmono, and I asked her what drawing exercises she would recommend. And I think she called it blind contour drawing.
Yeah, that's what that is.
Exactly what you just said. So that's really interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember at some point learning, you know, some very, very basic rules, which are really more like anatomy rules for humans. And one of the things that came as a shock to me is that your eyes are pretty much right in the center mm-hmm. of your head, yep. vertically. Yep. But when you look at a person, well, it's different if you look at me because I don't have any hair. It's pretty obvious. But if you look at someone with hair, you sort of, it's like your brain plays this trick on you and you think the eyes are higher than they are. Mm-hmm. And so that's sort of how I tried to interpret the idea of you got to learn to see and let your brain not trick you and actually draw what you're seeing and not what you think you're seeing.
Right.
Are there any other, you know, exercises you remember from that time that helped you develop any aspect of drawing, muscle memory, you know, fine motor control, stuff like that?
Yes. Other than the blind contouring, I remember that like our teacher had like a stopwatch and the model would pose for like 10 seconds. And we had to like quickly like sketch the pose with charcoal and then boom, another pose. And then we had to like quickly sketch that one so that, you know, instead of like being so precious with our drawings, we were able to like, you know, experiment with like the strokes and like how many strokes does it take to come across this pose? Like how does that read on the paper instead of like, you know, sketching little tiny lines so that it could look perfect, you know? So like the timed gesture drawing for me was like really great because now I don't have to think too much about the pose. I can just do it.
What a cool exercise. And I've seen, I think, I'm trying to remember the company. There's an online school. It's called the Gnomon School, G-N-O-M-O-N. And they have drawing classes where there's videos of models doing that. And mm-hmm. you only have a few seconds or 30 seconds or whatever to draw it. And it's interesting because it's making me think about the stuff you're doing now where in the motion design world, when you're doing character animation, it's more common to have super stylized, mm-hmm. simplified, abstracted characters than it is to have very realistic ones where you really need to draw something that looks like a real human.
Right.
Do you think that type of gesture drawing and I don't know what you'd call it, almost like just impressions mm-hmm. as opposed to like concrete things, did that help you develop your character design skills? That's something else I want to talk to you about, your character design skills. But did that help you get better at abstracting the human form?
I think so, yes. I think a combination of that as well as, you know, the time spent in class, spending like the whole 3 hours drawing a person has helped me. Because like, I feel like you have to understand the human body and actually draw all those forms and understand what a real human looks like and draw that before you can really abstract it, you know?
Right.
But yeah, that's definitely helped me. Rendering like a real render drawing of a person. All the shading and all the, you know, little divots and curves that are, that you see in a person's face, drawing all that actually helps more so for abstracting a character, because you know it's there, and then you know you can strip it all away and come up with something unique and different.
One of the things I noticed when I looked at your portfolio site, and we'll link to this in the show notes, so everyone should go check it out. There's a lot of cool stuff on there. So you have a lot of characters that you've drawn, and there are so many different styles of character on there. And, you know, I've worked with other character designers before, and sometimes people sort of have like one or two styles they're known for, and that's kind of their thing. Mm-hmm. And it's hard for them to mimic a different style or to just make up something totally different. But you don't seem to have that problem. So I'm curious if that's something that came naturally to you, or if you sort of have a method that you use when you're developing characters.
Well, I mean, for the longest time, I kind of struggled to find a style for myself. After taking the foundation courses, you know, my style would always be very sketchy, very loose looking. However, it wasn't until I came to Gunner, you know, and worked with these talented people, you know, that I found out that, you know, wow, I can actually change things up, because from project to project, you know, the characters change, the looks change, and I have to be able to adapt to that. So when I move on to like my personal work, when I go home from work, it automatically changes. Like, my drawings end up looking different. It's a weird phenomenon. It really is.
So it's almost like, and I'm going to come back to this because I want to really dig into that, but it's almost like just being exposed and being forced to draw characters that, you know, someone else designed, but you're animating, for example.
Right.
It's kind of seeped in and just kind of given your brain different ammo to use.
Yeah. Like, for example, in Space Explorers, I worked with this amazing illustrator, James Nollert, and, you know, he did all the style frames and he did all the designs for the characters and the whole world of the short. And I worked on that project for a year, and all of a sudden my drawings turned into James drawings, you know, like this is like you do it every day and you work on it, and then it's like you forget your own style. At least I do, you know. So it's kind of like martial arts, where you just do something repetitively and then it's like it's there until you work on the next project and you can shake it off.
So I'm trying to think, like, you know, someone listening to this who maybe that, you know, they have every character they draw looks exactly the same, mm-hmm. which that would be me, actually. I always forget to draw butts on my characters for some reason. So, but if I wanted to like attempt to incorporate a different style, I could, you know, sort of look at, for example, some of your characters and sort of try to sketch them, and doing that for a while, I might start sort of incorporate a little bit of that style. And mm-hmm. I really like this idea of, you know, you sort of have, luckily ending up at Gunner, been exposed to so many different styles and been forced to adapt to them.
Right.
So I think that's really, really cool. I wanted to ask you about, you know, when we met at Gunner, you were drawing, I think everybody had a big Cintiq or a small Cintiq.
Yeah, yeah.
And you were drawing on a Cintiq. What do you find it comparable to drawing on paper? Is there anything, you feel that's missing even with as good as Cintiqs have gotten?
I feel like with animation, there's no way I would animate on the computer without a Cintiq, because it does feel like I'm drawing on paper, you know, because I used to animate with like a tablet on the side, and I wasn't really, you know, I was like, I don't know how to, you know, my brain wasn't really connecting with my hand and the software. And it was like, I wish I could just draw on the screen. And so in that way, like, Cintiqs are like super useful for doing anything with art on the computer. However, I use the Cintiq only when I'm ready to animate, you know, because for me, like, paper allows me to get all my initial ideas and concepts out of the way and like the really bad, ugly drawings, you know, out of the way first. So like, I can't just go into Photoshop and start, you know, jotting down ideas and sketches on the Cintiq. You know what I mean? Cause it's like paper is just, I don't know. It allows me to do all the rough stuff. I'm less intimidated by it. And only then, after I did all my work on paper, I can move to the Cintiq.
That's kind of fascinating to me because I'm kind of the same way. Like in when I draw on paper, if I'm doing like, you know, thumbnail sketches or something that for an animatic, there's something about once I'm on the computer and I'm like setting up Photoshop layers, it feels like I have to be more careful, which is weird, even though you can hit undo in Photoshop, but it's like, I don't know. It's like, I kind of care more because of their pixels but on paper, it's like, I don't know. I have a stack of paper next to me. I should grab another one. It's really fascinating psychology. You know, I don't really understand why it works that way, but I see a lot of people doing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The Cintiq, when you're drawing in Photoshop on the Cintiq, you just kind of, I feel like I treat every drawing as like precious, you know. It's like, oh, this got to look good because it's in Photoshop. I don't know where that mentality comes from.
Yeah.
But it's like I actually kind of almost animate everything on paper as like thumbnails before I even move on to the computer, because then it's almost like I've animated on paper beforehand, you know.
Well, let's talk about animation. And first of all, I had a conversation with my buddy Joe Donaldson from Motionographer the other day, and I said the words sell animation, talking about what you do, you know, like on a Cintiq, drawing, animating in Photoshop. And he was like, well, it's not really cell animation because we're not drawing on, you know, celluloid anymore like we did in the, you know, in the 40s. I'm curious what you call it, the animation that you do.
I just call it 2D animation. I've never really heard it called cell animation until I came to Gunner. And then they were like, oh, you're a cell animator, right? And I'm like, I draw on frames. And they're like, yeah, it's a cell animation. I'm like, oh, okay, that's what I do. But I always just thought of it as just like traditional, not traditional, but like 2D animation because it's on the computer. I've never called it cell animation until now.
There's, you know, historically in motion design, been a little bit of a separation between the type of animation that you do, drawing frame by frame, that sort of thing, and the type of animation that I used to do a lot of, which was you design something in Photoshop and maybe you use Illustrator to create some elements and then you bring it on to After Effects and you animate it. And you're using the same principles. There's timing and spacing and follow through and, you know, squash and stretch and all that, but you're not actually drawing anything. And I think that I kind of struggle to know what to call it either, you know, and it seems like it seems now, especially at places like Gunner, there's not much of a line anymore. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious, you know, how much exposure you've had to sort of doing more traditional MoGraphy stuff in After Effects, you know, where you have a shape layer and then you put two keyframes. Like, do you do any of that or do you do everything kind of the old fashioned way?
I do like everything the old fashioned way. I still don't understand how they do it. And After Effects for me, when using it in school, was always like a compositing software, just putting my animatics in there and putting sound in there and not necessarily to animate in at all. So, that's something that I have, you know, I'm always curious about, like, how do you animate in After Effects and how do you make it look so good and smooth? You know, it's just, I still don't understand it.
That's really funny to me. So there's things that animators like me do in After Effects because we haven't practiced enough, aren't good at doing what you do. And it must look kind of silly, like if we need a character's arm to move a certain way, but the rig won't do it, we have to jump through 12 hoops and, you know, do all kinds of hacks to make it work. whereas you can just kind of draw the thing, but it still feels sort of like a dark art, I think, to a lot of After Effects animators who haven't learned to do what you do. So, I've done a little bit of cell animation. Mm-hmm. I've like dabbled in it a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really fun, but it's very, very difficult. Right. At least to me. And I'm curious, when you started dabbling in this, did it kind of come naturally to you, or was it just as painful for you to get the hang of as it was for me?
I feel like I can say that I have like an eye for it, but there's never anything that I do that comes easy. I wish I was one of those people who could just do something and it's automatically amazing. it takes a lot of patience and a lot of work to do cell animation because, first of all, you have to kind of know how to draw, and then you have to understand, at least when you're doing character animation, you have to understand body mechanics, you have to understand lead and follow. Like should I make the head move first and then the chest, or is the hips leading the character? And, it takes a lot of practice. I often feel like animators, people who are interested in the medium, they have an eye for it because they've seen it. They've watched Miyazaki movies and they develop their eye, but then it's like their hand has to catch up, and it's something that everybody has to, get over the growing pains of animation. It's always painful, it's always painful, but it's worth going through that process to see the end result for me.
Something you just said reminded me of, I don't know if you've seen it, but there's this great video, it's on Vimeo somewhere, of a short film based on this quote that Ira Glass of This American Life, he had this quote about what he calls the gap, which is the gap between your taste that you've developed from watching, things that you love and knowing what's good and what's bad, and your actual ability to recreate those things. And with cell animation, that gap is pretty huge.
It's huge.
Yeah. So you mentioned, you clearly have a grasp on the mechanics of it. You talked about lead and follow, which I'm guessing is basically follow through, another word for it. Like, things that lag or that, right, that lead. You've also, in addition to going to college for creative studies, you've taken classes with Animation Mentor and iAnimate. I'm wondering if you could talk about those two programs a little bit. Like, why did you decide to take those and what did you get out of them?
Well, really, for my whole life, I've really just wanted to be a 3D animator. I love 2D animation, and I took those courses during my time at the College for Creative Studies. So it was like I was going to two schools at once. But, my passion, I felt, was always 3D animation because, that's what every film, or at least feature film, I saw was 3D. And I was like, well, if I want to do this, I should learn that. So I took Animation Mentor, and, that's such an amazing program. You work in Maya, so you are given rigs that you animate. And in those courses, I first of all understood how to, puppeteer really a character in Z space. In 2D animation, you are just focused on like a flat drawing, but in 3D, you have to rotate around the character, and it's almost like being a puppet master, really.
Right.
Which is really difficult. But I learned a lot about body mechanics and taking reference of yourself for your animations. Yeah, and that actually applied to, that really helped me in my 2D animations as well, because now I understand a lot about volume and how to keep, a 2D animated character proportionate. So like it all crosses over, really. It was just more animation training for me.
So why did you decide not to stick with 3D animation?
Well, to be honest, like this, it's kind of been like a tug of war in my heart when it comes to both mediums, because like I love 3D so much, and it's something I still haven't had a grasp on yet. Like I'm still working towards being good at it, but I just really. The honest answer is that life just seems to want me to do 2D animation. Like, honestly, like it comes more naturally to me than 3D, and it's fun and I love to draw, and it just that's just where my life is going, and I love it too. If it wants to go that way, that's great, because it's been a blast so far.
I still think it's really cool though that you took Animation Mentor, which has an amazing reputation. Mm-hmm. Some of our students have also taken Animation Mentor and they rave about it.
Yeah.
And you know, we have a character animation class, and it's interesting how knowledge can cross over in ways that you don't really mm-hmm. anticipate. You know, I mean, when you're doing character animation, and I'm sure a lot of people listening don't do a lot of it because it's challenging. It's right. a little bit different than animating a logo or something. But when you learn character animation, you learn the importance of pose, which in 2D, it's really like, and 3D too, what's the silhouette that you're creating with that character? Are there lines of action that are kind of interesting? And that kind of relates back to gesture drawing. Mm-hmm. And in all of these things actually apply perfectly when you're doing traditional logo reveals too, because all of it, I mean, it may not be obvious how, but all like everything you learn makes you better. And it's just interesting, like the strange combination of ingredients that made your education and turned you into the amazing animator you are. All right, let's get into the tools a little bit. When I saw you at Gunner, you were animating in Photoshop, which mm-hmm. seems to be very popular these days. I'm assuming, you know, it's probably has a lot to do with just people are comfy in Photoshop and the brushes are really good and all that. I'm curious why, though, that's your tool of choice. And have you used other programs? Are there like other pros and cons for using, say, TV Paint or something like that?
Well, actually, I didn't start animating in Photoshop until I came to Gunner. Yeah, there's a lot of firsts at Gunner. I you know, honestly, it's quite impossible for me to animate in Photoshop without the plugins like AnimDesign and Animator's Toolbar.
Yep.
Because those help you like create the frames, you know, if you want, you know, one frame. And then you can do onion skin, so you can look back at your previous frame and, you know, color code them. And that made it possible, really, to animate in Photoshop. Without those, I'd probably stick to TV Paint, because I was using that in school. TV Paint is also a really great program. For me, as long as the software has a timeline, frames to add and subtract and onion skin, then I can animate in it pretty much.
Why then at Gunner did you switch to Photoshop? Was it just because the designs were coming in Photoshop? It was easier to just work on them in the same app, or was there some other reason?
Well, when I came into Gunner, they were working on their short mesh, and you know, that was the first thing I worked on. And so we had another, very talented freelance animator, Mel McCann. And, you know, she gave me her roughs and I had to clean them, you know, color them, you know, and make it final. So she was working in Photoshop, and, you know, I just kind of felt like I had to adapt to that, because, you know, it's like, well, she's doing it in Photoshop, well, I can do it in Photoshop. That's pretty much how it happened. I think that's just the animation software that we, or, you know, the software that we use for animation here.
Can you talk a little bit about the workflow? You just mentioned something that I think a lot of people listening may not actually understand. Going from roughs to clean up to paint, which is sort of like the traditional process that, you know, Disney would use. They would have sort of the lead animators animate things with a pencil, and then it would go to a cleanup artist, and that was a process, and then it would go to ink and paint. How does that process work now in Photoshop, and like almost maybe explain what each of those steps are for.
Yeah. So like, of course, when you animate something, you don't want to start off with like a really like a final drawing, because when you're animating, you're thinking and you're jotting down ideas as you go, and you're eliminating frames and you're adding frames and you're, you know, moving them around and extending them to, you know, to get the timing right. So first, you know, you have to do rough animation, and it can look like stick figures, it can look like scribbles or whatever you want. And then usually after that, after I get the timing down and this is what I want, I do a tie down pass, which is just making the lines a little bit cleaner, still maybe a little rough, but, you know, so I can actually see what's happening so that I can like make everything proportionate, fix things that I didn't in the roughs. And then after the tie down pass, then I do a final line pass. And then after the final line pass, I color it. So it's almost like you're animating the same thing like five different times.
Yeah. It sounds very tedious. And I understand, like, you know, why on a feature film there would be different departments handling that stuff. So you could sort of almost have a conveyor belt process to finish shots. And I'm curious if, you know, if you think that, because it sounds like you're doing everything, like you're, you know, you're animating your shots, then you're cleaning them up, and then you're getting the lines, and then you're painting. Do you feel like there's any reason to sort of try and bring that old school factory approach to animation into motion design, or do you like doing all those things? Is there like a good reason that why you think you should be doing those things and not maybe, I don't know, an intern or a junior animator or something?
Well, like, to be honest, I actually enjoy doing the whole process because I can call it, you know, it's kind of selfish to kind of call it mine, although I would love help all the time, but it's just like nice to know that I did this from start to finish. And like for me, like cell animation is only one part of what we do here at Gunner. So like, you know, I'm responsible for that part of the project. You know, everyone else is doing, you know, 3D and storyboards and design. So, you know, I feel like I want to do the whole process, you know, just to, I don't know, just to like, I don't know, get it done.
Like feel ownership of
it.
Or
ownership, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. I totally get that. I definitely get that. Well, let's talk about Gunner. So Gunner, just in case someone listening doesn't know who Gunner is, go to gunner.org, check out their stuff. They are really making a name for themselves very quickly in the industry. Everybody I talk to about Gunner loves Gunner. So how did you end up getting the Gunner gig? And I assume it helps that you were in Detroit.
Yeah.
How did that play out?
It's funny. My teacher, which was Mel McCann, awesome freelance animator, she freelanced with Gunner at the time and 2016, and I was just graduating school, and I was like, oh, I have to find a job, you know. And then everyone tells you in school to like go to California or go to New York, and you know, I didn't really know how to approach, you know, finding a job, because you know, I was trying to finish my senior film and graduation was approaching, and you know, I didn't really know what to do. And I've never heard of Gunner before until she told me, hey, Gunner is looking for interns. And I said, oh, cool. I looked at their website and I was like, wow, this stuff is really awesome. And so I emailed them and I was like, hey, my name's Rachel. I animate. Look at my stuff. And, you know, they were having a party for their opening. And so I went to their party and we talked, and then they called me in for an interview, and then that's when I got it, and I was super excited.
I bet. Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, that transition going from student and into the real world can be a doozy for some people. So can you talk about what was that transition like? Because, you know, you were a student. It sounds like you were very sort of ambitious, in the College for Creative Studies, but also doing animation mentor, learning 2D and 3D at the same time. But what was it like going from student to intern and then from intern to pro? Like what were the challenges, you know, or the things that were hard to acclimate to?
Well, I think the most challenging thing for me was, you know, while in school, you're always reviewing your reel and changing your portfolio, going to like conventions like CTN and getting your work critiqued by professionals as a student and by your peers. And it just sometimes as a student, it just feels like your work is never enough. You know, like people tell you, oh, well, you have potential, but, or like, this is really good, but keep working on this, keep working on that. And it's like, you know, I have a whole lifetime to work on this. And it just sometimes as a student, it feels like you're not going to get anywhere because animation is so hard and you have to, it takes so much time to learn. And so when I came into Gunner, it was like a real surprise really for me, for them to like really enjoy my work. And I was able to be an asset, you know, to the team and get recognized by School of Motion is real crazy, you know, like, oh, wow, I've actually did something right. I kept going as a student and I didn't give up, you know, because sometimes you don't think your work is good enough. And then finally, when an awesome studio takes you in and gives you a chance, you become better and then you have more confidence in your work and you know that you could contribute to the team.
Yeah. So when you were telling that story, that it sort of reminded me of something that happened when I started freelancing, which was kind of surprising to me. And I'm trying to sort of figure out how to say this. Like I had a full-time job and I did After Effects, you know, like I was actually an editor more than an After Effects artist, but I got really into motion design and I wanted to do that full time. So I quit and I went freelance. And my work at that time was like probably objectively awful. It was not good. And, but then somehow a client gave me an opportunity and that first job I did for them was the best thing I'd ever done. And I don't know if it's like a thing of, it was always there. I just never had the opportunity to show it. Or if you're a student or if you're in, you know, a job that isn't actually kind of encouraging you and pushing you to do really good work, that it just doesn't come out of you. So I'm curious, when you got to Gunner and you were an intern and they put you on your first project, did your work improve in your eyes or was it just a different way of looking at it instead of, you know, your faculty and other students looking constantly for things that could be improved? Gunner's a business and they're right. Saying, yeah, that looks awesome. I think the client's going to love that.
Yeah. There's, you know, that's the difference really. Like I think my work improved immensely since being at Gunner because instead of getting critiqued for my like skills, it was more like a critique for, you know, well, the client wants this and this is how we want it to look and this is how we want it to move. And then when I do it, then it's like, cool, great, let's move on to the next shot, you know. And it's like, you know, doing that helped me get better at animation because you have to be quick, you know. Animation is kind of at the tail end of the pipeline. You have to do the design, you have to do the storyboards, and if we're working with 3D, kind of have to do that first, and then animation before rendering and compositing. So even with like the deadlines and just working with everyone, being a part of that, people depending on you helped me get better. And that was also a challenge as well, but it improved my animation because I had less time to really nitpick myself and be self-conscious and just do the work, really.
That's really good advice, actually, for anyone out there listening. It's a lot of artists are sort of masochists and like to, you know, it's almost like a tick to feel down about the work you just did. and it's kind of nice sometimes to be in these like, you know, pressure cooker situations where you don't really have time for that and you just have to do it, get it done. And then, and I also think it helps too when you're part of a team that it kind of diffuses some of that responsibility and you can play to your strengths as an animator and rely on, you know, say like Ian's one of the founders of Gunner, rely on his strength as a designer. And the combo is pretty awesome. So I want to talk about how that works at a place like Gunner. You know, you look at maybe a good example. There's something, I don't know if I'm pronouncing this right, Nandu Apparatus.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So there's this cool little piece that Gunner put out. It's on their site. It's on their Vimeo. We'll link to it in the show notes. And it's this cute little character sort of doing almost like a floor routine, like you see at the Olympics, but on this pile of 3D geometry. Right. And there's obviously 3D in it, and there's a cell, you know, sort of traditional animation in it, and it works perfectly in sync together. And it's sort of one of those things where it's like, well, where do you start? Like, how do you figure out, like, do you do the 3D first? Do you do the cell first? What if you adjust something? Can you talk about what that process looks like from start to finish, you know, how it all integrates?
Yes. Well, first of all, we have an amazing artist here, Marcus. He came up with it. I don't know how his mind works. It's pretty unique.
Special.
Yeah. But he came up with the characters and the whole idea of, you know, the moving shapes in 3D. And of course he did the animatic and the timing for each shot. And we tweaked that. And I would take that, put that into Photoshop, draw on top of that, and start doing rough animations. Of course, before I do that, I kind of try to get an idea of what I want to do on paper. So I always looked up reference for like Tai Chi or some kind of Kung Fu to get some of the movements for the character. But then, yeah, it took like 3 weeks to animate the character. And as I was doing that, Marcus was animating the shapes in like Cinema 4D. So in a shot where I didn't have to draw on top of the moving 3D shapes, he would be in progress with that, you know, on his own. And then, you know, once he's done with that, then it's like, okay, I can draw on top of that, animate on top of the moving shapes. And then I give it back to him and then he does his thing in After Effects and makes it look super cool. And then that was it.
Is there a lot of back and forth, like, you know, the character lands on a shape and it would be cool if that shape kind of reacted and dipped a little bit. So now you got to, you know, hey, Marcus, so he's going to land on this one, on this frame. Like, you know, how do you, or is it pretty clean? Like, you know, someone has it in their head and it's just like, nope, you did it right on the first try.
Marcus did some previs. So the character wasn't animated. So he kind of placed it on the shape and kind of move the shape with the character. So when he landed, you know, the character was there and the shape was moving with the character. So it's like the shape was reacting to the character without it being animated yet, you know? So then I would take that previs and then I would just make sure the character is right where, you know, the kind of default character was placed on the shape. If that makes any sense, I'm trying to find the words.
Well, I mean, it doesn't. I guess the point is that it takes a lot of planning, and you know, doing that, like you basically did a pre-viz pass, you know, the way like a visual effects shop would for a movie before going in and doing all the simulations and all that stuff. They sort of make sure that basically it works. And it seems like for cell animation, that's super important because if you finished a shot and then something changed, you can't just go in and fix it real easy most of the time, right? So another piece that Gunner did recently was sort of the announcement for the second season of the Motion Awards. And mm-hmm. that thing is such a cool piece, and it has a million little cute characters in it and stuff like that.
Right.
And, you know, when I was visiting the studio, they were showing me how many versions of, you know, character designs and animations and cuts and this and that went into making that. So how does it work where, you know, a lot of times in motion design, that's how it works. You're on version 80 before the thing ships, but your task that you have to do, you don't want to do it more than once all the way through if you can avoid it, right? So is that, does it typically work out that way? Or do sometimes you finish a shot and it's like, change this. Well, basically I got to just do the whole thing over now.
Well, yes, we try to avoid that as much as possible.
Yeah.
But I feel like you have to start somewhere. So I'd probably do a test and then I'd say, you know, it'd be nice to have this here before I animate that, because, you know, sometimes your animation is contingent upon what someone else is doing in 3D, and then they have to finish that first. So then I can animate on top of that. Right. Yeah. So sometimes like it's a back and forth process with everyone. And you just kind of have to do it and say, well, this didn't work. So, you know, how about we do this first and then I animate, and then and then sometimes it works out like that. You know, it's really just trial and error until you get it right.
Yeah. So let's talk about the Space Explorers piece that recently dropped, because that was one where you said that you were actually animating characters that were designed by someone else, right?
Right.
Yeah. So that to me is crazy. So getting back to what we were talking about, you know, with drawing and having, you know, different styles that you can kind of pull from, when you are animating someone else's character design, is that more difficult because it's not how you just sort of naturally draw? Does it take more effort to do that? Or is that something that as kind of a trained animator, you sort of know how to do?
I think that part of the reason I'm able to do it is difficult, but I'm the part of the reason why I'm able to do it is because I have to, you know, it's like, well, it has to look like this. So I have to like draw it over and over and over again in order to like get the essence of that character. And James's piece is a very loose style in Space Explorers. We use the pencil tool in Photoshop the whole time. And it's very sketchy. It's clean, but like it has this kind of, you know, looseness to it. And so his style kind of changes, you know, a little bit with each shot. So it was a little hard to figure out, okay, how does this character look? And a lot of the times I would default to my natural like default style for myself. And then, you know, James would remind me, hey, you know, it's supposed to look like this. And I'm like, oh yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
it's a little difficult, but I think it's fun because, you know, that helps me improve when I do my personal work, because a lot of the times I get bored with my own style. You know, it's like, I want this to look different for once. And working on Space Explorers and all the different projects at Gunner really helped with that.
Well, you're definitely in the right place to be working on a lot of different styles, because Gunner's work certainly has variety. There's no question there. So my last question, Rachel, is what skills are you working on now? You seem like someone who's always trying to learn new stuff and really into, you know, improving, but also broadening your skill set, stuff like that. So is there anything at the moment that you're working on?
Well, I do continue to do some 3D animated tests on the side on my own. But I think since being at Gunner and learning more about, you know, motion design, and I want to get better at like color and design, and I started working on like my perspective so that I can start putting these characters in an environment for myself, because that's really difficult for me, perspective. But it's more so learning more about the MoGraph industry as a whole and being able to contribute more than just cell animation, you know, because I'm a traditional animator. I studied feature animation, and in school you know, the College for Creative Studies didn't really expose me to like the motion design industry. And I'm just learning it now as I'm at Gunner. So basically I'm looking at the work that my peers are doing and learning from them, and they show me how to do things. I just want to be a well-rounded artist and be able to contribute.
Well, I got to say, you know, at 24, you are in the right spot and you've got really good skills. And I have no doubt that, you know, the next several years of your career, you're going to get even better. And I cannot wait to see what you and the amazing team over there come up with next. So I want to say thank you so much for your time, Rachel. This has been awesome. And we will definitely have to have you back on when you hit 30.
Thank you so much for having me, Joey.
Check out Rachel's work and definitely check out Gunner's work to see some ridiculous talent on display. Those links plus a bunch more are all found in the show notes for this episode at schoolofmotion.com. And while you're there, sign up for a free account so you can get access to our Motion Mondays newsletter. It's a bite-sized email that keeps you up to date on the industry. You can read it in like 1 minute. And you won't have to pretend that you've actually heard of the hot new After Effects plugin, because we'll tell you about it. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks again to Rachel for being awesome and coming on, and I'll see you later.